Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So I call your name, your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and I'm joined by Tom and Melissa Gould, and we're your hosts for this evening. As you know, the gathering is our show where we kick around some various topics and we answer your questions. Many of you send us your questions via email, and we have those. But we would also love to hear from you live on the show. And if you want to join in and discuss something, ask a question, the number is 888-627-6008. Not much to talk about in terms of announcements, except that our Holidays Past raffle, where you can win a reading with one of five different certified mediums. That's going on. I think there's about 2 weeks left in that raffle. So it's $5 a chance. You can log on to that event page via our website and take part in it. So let's jump to our first question, and then we'll read email, and then we'll go to a live call. This question was how is time experienced in the afterlife? Well, it's a good question. You know, I mean, we can't know for sure. We surmise that time is nothing like time is in the physical world. You know, in the physical world, everything is linear, you know, the past, the present, and the future. And where they are, it's very likely that there are such, you know, everything's mixed together. There are no restrictions. You can be in multiple places at once. You can experience the past and the future and the present. And at least that's what we've read. By the way, that's not all that far off from what, you know, a lot of physicists tell us today, you know, even with our known, you know, physical laws. So I don't think it's a situation like we do here. What are we going to do tomorrow? What are we yesterday? It just happens and you just experience. You guys on board with that?
Yeah, that's what I've heard. You know, that here in the physical world, time is a linear thing. And apparently on the other side, time, everything happens at the same time. As you were saying before, you can be in many different places. Time is, I've heard time and money don't exist in the afterlife.
It's still such a hard concept, though, to grasp. You know, like, what happened first? What's happening next? You mean, it doesn't, that's not even a factor.
No, it's everything. Everything's in the moment, as Eckhart Tolle would have it, that you want to live in the moment because that's all you've got.
Well, that is the mantra I use when I meditate. In this moment, I am at peace. So let's hope all the moments on the other side are peaceful ones too.
So maybe when you're meditating, you're experiencing the next world, right?
That's right.
I think so. I think, well, that's, well, that is the key then, that and the value of meditation, because it does put your spiritual self in alignment. Whereas, you know, in day-to-day life, we've got our conscious mind sublimates the spiritual, and we're worried about time, and we're worried about money, and we're worried about where we're going next, the future, or what we did in the past, and all of these things are basically meaningless. And if you meditate, then you do away with that, what they call the monkey brain that's chattering in your head, and trying to get you into the flow of the universe.
And another point to that, because I know I spoke about this at our last grief retreat, is that when you meditate, even if it's just a few minutes every day, you are going within yourself more into that spiritual connection. And what I think makes sense then, if we're going within ourselves to the spirit that we are, which would also be the spirit that we incarnated in, it's the same spirit that was with our loved ones who are in spirit. So it brings us closer to our loved ones.
Now let's take a live call. Let's go to Sandy from Arizona. Hi, Sandy.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. You're on The Gathering. And did you have a question or something you'd like to discuss?
Yes. I experienced a soul voice call from my late husband. My question is, will I ever receive anything like that again? Is that something that can be deciphered besides me, my relatives and people that I've reached out to another medium psychic, he called himself, very, very awesome gentleman, told me that he didn't quite understand what was being said, but I did. And I just want to know your thoughts on it.
Well, by soul voice, you're talking about you captured a voice recording, right? Electronic voice phenomena. Yeah. So, I mean, you're not alone, and many people do this, and many people do this on a regular basis. You know, they make a habit of it. They set aside a certain time of the day that they do it, or certain days of the week, and you know, they set an intention, requesting their loved one come through, and they turn on the recorder for 20 or 30 seconds, and then they play it back. You know, you were lucky. I mean, sometimes it takes people months or years before they get a recording, and sometimes people get recordings on a regular basis. You know, so the key thing is, you played that recording, you know, so, friends. I mean, you evidently were able to understand it, you know, clearly, and maybe some other people don't. So, you know, that's the thing about these electronic voice phenomena, you know, recordings, is that some of them are crystal clear and some of them, you know, are not. And sometimes it takes a trained ear. But I think you were on the right track when you played it for other people. And of course, if everybody heard the same thing you did, then, you know, it's kind of definitive. But if not, I guess just to answer your question, yes, you can expect more. And the more you keep doing it, the more you're going to get. I mean, you know, your loved one wants to communicate with you. So I would encourage you to, you know, to keep at it. It's a great way for them to provide proof to you that they still exist.
Yeah.
Can I ask you another question?
Sure.
You said that I made it possible. I had no idea that it was going to happen. I had just lost him. And literally a month later, I'm calling a creditor to try to figure out what was going on in our life, what I was going to do. And all of a sudden, when I dialed that creditor's number, he came on. And I knew immediately that it was him. It was a winner.
Well, yeah, I understand. I understand your question, because I mentioned setting your attention, okay. But you know, that's if you want to try to facilitate it. But these things happen. Most of them happen the way that you describe it. It's spontaneous. You know, all of a sudden something comes on your phone, or comes on your computer, or on your telephone, you know, answering device, or whatever, when you're least expecting it. So sometimes the voices come through in recordings of medium reading. So you don't necessarily, if he wants to get through to you, he'll find a way to get through to you, whether you request it or not, you know, so it's not unusual.
Well, I think what Bob was referring to, the part of your question is that, will that happen again? And there's certainly no guarantees, because it's just as it's difficult for us on our side to raise our vibrations to get to a place where we're communicating, the spirit has to lower their vibration to be able to communicate with us. And that, it seems, is not as easy as you would hope. But if you want it to happen again, as Bob says, set out the intention. Speak to, because, you know, you can communicate with your loved ones better than they can with you by just talking about them and calling out to them and saying, look, let's try this. I'm going to set up a recorder or whatever. And can you tell me something? Can you make an imprint? So that's what he means by setting the intention to try to have it happen again.
And Sandy, I have to chime in here because I had a similar experience, unexpected, wasn't planned, but it was my dad's voice left on our phone answering machine at the tail end of a call my daughter had placed here. And I have to tell you, it only happened the one time, and thinking back now, it had to have been about 9 years ago. But Tom was able to put it on. My car's old, has a CD player in it. Tom was able to put this message on a CD, and every day when I start my car up, that's the first thing I listen to. I hear my dad's voice, and I just thank him for it. And I have not had a repeat experience. However, I don't think I've actually asked for one. I think I was so just touched to get this one, I didn't ask for another one. So it couldn't hurt to ask.
Okay. Well, thanks. Thanks for calling, Sandy. I hope you get more messages.
I hope so, too. Thank you guys so much for everything that you do. It's helping me greatly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care, Sandy.
Okay, next question we have here. How does learning work for Discarnates? They have access to so much knowledge in their realm, yet one hears that they learn from things that we in the physical realm do. I don't know. I don't necessarily hear that, you know, they learn from things that we do in the physical realm. I think that while we're in the physical realm, you know, we're learning and we take, you know, maybe those lessons, if you want to call it, with us to the other side. You know, as far as having access to so much knowledge, it said that they do. And how do they learn? And how do they work? Well, you know, the only thing we have to go by are these, you know, channeled reports that were channeled mostly, you know, a century ago through very credible mediums. And you know, they report that, you know, some of the reports is that, you know, first of all, we have to understand that we're not talking about physical things. Physical things are manifested through thought. So if they want to learn in a library, they could manifest a library. If they want to attend the university, they manifest, you know, the university. And so learning it's hard to think, describe it in physical terms. But I think that you're right that, you know, because, you know, listen to near-death experiences and they tell you that while they were in the afterlife realm, they had access to so much knowledge. They talk about it as if they were transfused with all this knowledge, you know, into their very fiber. And sometimes they take and retain a lot of the knowledge that was downloaded to them in the afterlife realm. So I think that there is unlimited possibilities over there for learning, but we have free will there like we have here. So that's up to the person in spirit, right? Wouldn't you say so, guys?
Yeah.
That makes me think of the Testimony of Light again. That the book we often mention, Testimony of Light by Helen Greaves, she spoke about having teachers, people who were helpers to help others learn. And part of the learning may come from that life review that they have right at the time of death, where they see the error of their ways.
Yeah, and I read a book by Ron Moody.
Dr. Raymond Moody?
Raymond Moody, I'm sorry. And he studied a lot with near-death experiences. And what he found that a majority of people who have experienced a near-death experience, when they come back, one of the things they seem to be hungry for is learning, for knowledge. They go back to school. They start to a field of study is that You know, people come back saying, you know, I wish I had learned more in my life. So learning is apparently an ongoing experience here and there.
I think you're right. And a lot of people have this conception that once we pass over, we're instantly going to become, you know everything and be, you know, all knowing and, you know, sort of godlike, you know, and the reports, that's not the way it is. You know, when we pass over, we're much like we were here initially, you know,
A lot of people who cross over don't even realize they've crossed over because they don't feel any different.
Right. So it's a continuing process, you know, of learning and adjusting and, you know, and so forth. You know, we have a question that says, you know, where is the afterlife dimension that our souls go to and exist in relative to our own dimension? You know, and then, right. Of course, yeah, we, you know, we're talking, you know, planes of existence, and we have a tendency here when we think of the afterlife, what do? We look up, right? You know, yeah. like we look up to the heavens. But if we're talking about dimensions, you know, that they're planes of existence. So as we've, you know, talked about before, you know, the other dimension could be right in front of our faces. You know, that other world is taking place, you know, right in front of us, you know, but, you know, we think of it as so far away, but, you know, this is a kind of, you know, a concept that physics addresses, but I don't think that, you know, it's directional. They're up there or they're here or down there. It's just, we step through one door and out the other, right?
Yeah. And as we've seen in readings, a lot of mediums will say, there's somebody standing right behind mm-hmm. you. And that's that. Or if you know, all of a sudden you feel a chill or a wind or something, and you're inside and there's no breeze coming through, and yet you feel something, that's them making contact. And yeah, so as we said, they're living on the same earth as we are, only they have a vibration that's higher that we can't see or communicate with. And they also have the ability that I got from a reading from my dad is, hey, if you want to go to Mars, boom, you go to Mars, you know, or if you want to go to the 17th century and look at something back there, you do that. So they're not necessarily right with us all the time for us, but they have the ability to be right with us, or the ability to be a lot of places.
Right. Now, let's take another phone call. We have Kathy from North Carolina. Hello, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I had to make the choice about 2 years to take my mother off life support. And I feel so guilty for it, and I'm not sure whether my mother forgives me for it or if she is okay with it. How yeah. can I find out?
Well, I mean, your mom may come through in a medium reading, and that's one of the things that they talk about, you know, when they feel that somebody has guilt. My personal belief is that your mother saw what you did as a blessing, and that, you know, souls know when their earthly time is up, and when it's time for them to go to the next world, it's time. And, you know, physical suffering, in my opinion, you know, at a certain point, there is no point to it. You know, we're taught to believe that we have to extend our physical life at all costs and suffer and do whatever we can to extend the time, you know, when there's really no quality of life. So, I mean, I think of what you did, and I totally understand that it's a horrible decision to have to make, and the terrible guilt that comes along with it. But it's the opposite, the way I see it. You know, what you did was brave, necessary, and was a blessing for your mom.
I agree. I hope my children will make that decision for me if the time ever comes. I really do.
Well, you don't have to because you have a living will. I have made wills for people, and I always insist on including a living will in there because of an issue I had when my father passed. He had a massive stroke, but he was still alive. And my brother, who is a doctor, the family gathered around, and my brother could not deny when he saw the scan that the doctor showed us of his brain. It was gone pretty much, and he was never going to ever talk to us again or you know, be a functional being. And yet my brother, as a doctor, Hippocratic oath is, well, you can't pull the plug. I mean, a doctor has to keep people alive. And fortunately, he had a living will that it was his wishes not to be kept alive by artificial means and a do not resuscitate kind of thing. And when my brother's, the doctor saw that, he could not argue it. And then he agreed, and we took him off the life support. And what Bob said before, and the argument that I had with my brother is, you know, what is, you know, why keep him alive? And the phrase quality of life came up. And I said, well, there's no quality in this life. He's on a bed. He's got the tubes coming in and out. He doesn't even know anybody's there. Is that a quality of life? And we decided no, and then took him off life support. And I'm with Bob. I think it was a blessing that we did. And not only that, in a mediumship reading, he came back and thanked us for that.
Yeah.
So I really don't think you should feel at all guilty, because what you did was give your mother a release to her spiritual world, where now she's unencumbered. There's no pain. There's no infirmity anymore.
Right. Well, I did find her living will after she passed, about maybe 3 months later, and it said exactly that too, that she didn't want to be on life support. And that was a relief. But my mom said about a week before she passed, I didn't know what she was talking about. Maybe she had a premonition that she was going to die. She said, I wish I could have 2 more months with you. And I said, Mom, I said, yeah, the doctor said that, you know, you probably were going to, because she had small cell carcinoma in the lungs, you're probably going to live for another 15 months, you know, we have time, but we didn't have time. And I think she knew that. And I don't know, sometimes my mom was kind of wishy-washy, you know, like I can just hear her in my ear, but Kathy, you should have let me stay for a little bit. I don't know. I think I need to talk to a medium.
Yes, I agree.
That's a good way to go.
I think so.
Yeah. And don't forget, I mean,
can you recommend one?
Well, if you go to the certified medium list on our website, you can, you know, see one that resonates with you. But I mean, I think your mother said that out of love. I mean, she loved you, and we want to spend as much time as we can with our loved ones, but only when it makes sense, you know, when we're not in pain and we're not suffering and so forth. So I'm sure that that love bond that you had still continues. It's just in a different form. So. I hope that she does come through in a reading with a medium. It's very likely that she would.
So,
thank you.
Sorry if you wasn't.
I did have one dream. Yeah. I have a question to ask you. Yeah. Can I ask you one more?
Yeah, sure.
I guess it was about maybe a month or two after she passed, and I couldn't even sleep because I was so wrought with guilt and pain and sorrow. And I had a really vivid dream. It was so strange, where she appeared in darkness. There was nothing else around. And she said, just very simply, Kathy, I'm not mad at you. Uh-huh. And I started to ask her another question. And then she just like fell back like an inanimate object. And that was that. But I felt like, oh my God, I think that was Mom. I've never had a dream like that.
You got your answer right there. Yeah, I mean, she came to you in a dream visitation and she answered your question. She knew that you were feeling guilty and she told you not to. So that, you know, that was a visitation and that was a blessing. So you should take that to heart.
Yeah, that's better than a medium reading.
Oh, but I have to give you an inside tip, Kathy. If you can't get through to one of the mediums, come to one of our grief retreats, and then you'll get confirmation.
Yeah.
Okay. Well. Is that on your website?
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, everything's on the website. In fact, there's even a raffle now that we're running to a holiday raffle that you could win a reading.
So if Mom wants you to win that, if she's into gambling, she might. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I had never heard of you before, and I subscribed to Goop, and there was an email, and there was a headline about the Family First thing, and so I looked in it, and I thought, oh my God, this, I need to talk to these people, so I'm going to listen to you regularly and check that out. Yeah, and I did do that raffle.
Oh, good.
Best of luck with that.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, if you want to learn more about the grief retreats, you could watch that Surviving Death series on Netflix. They featured one of our retreats on there. But thank you, Kathy, for calling. Be well. Have a good
holiday. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Let's see. Let's go to another question here. I guess a lot of people can relate to this question. She said, I hope to believe there's an afterlife, and I'm reading and researching lots of items and books, but there is a nagging slight doubt, and I'm wondering how you could reassure me that there is 100% proof. Well, there we go. You know, I mean, it's
only,
you know, I mean, I think, you know, you have to get to that knowing stage. It's a personal proof. I mean, there's no 100% proof. But look at it this way. I mean, even as Tom can attest to, in law, you have to prove things beyond a reasonable doubt. And if you examine all of the evidence, you know, that points to life after death, you know, I think it eliminates, you know, reasonable doubt, you know, so you could call that, you know, proof in a sense, but, you know, maybe one day there will be, you know, 100%, you know, proof that we could point to and communicate with our loved ones, you know, directly whenever we want and so forth. But the best we're going to do now is build a foundation that you can fall back on, you know, learn about, you know, mediumship and near-death experiences and deathbed visions, reincarnation, all these things that we talk about, build upon that until you get to the point where you know in your heart, you know, that there is, you know, life after that.
There's another tool that we recommend also, because often you'll have the dream and you'll think, well, was that or wasn't it? You'll still have a little doubt. Or you'll see, you'll be thinking about them and you'll start up your car and their favorite song comes on the radio and you go, wow, that's a coincidence. Or is it? And you, every instant, you know, nobody gets the full, well, not nobody, but rarely will you get a full, this is definitely them standing in front of me. So you get these little hints. And what we recommend is that you keep a journal. And every time you see something like that, the song on the radio, the feather in your path, the penny that you find in an odd place, the dream visit, all of these things, if you write them down, after a time, especially times when you start to really doubt this, you pick up the journal and when you see, wow, there was this, there was this, there was this, and you start to pile them up. And you think, wow, how can it be anything else? So you know, think of that.
Okay. Let's see. Barbara would like to know if our loved ones in spirit hear us every time we talk to them. Also, I was wondering if their personalities remain the same as on Earth. And I would say that they pay attention and they're aware of what we're doing, but no, I don't think that they listen to everything that we say or do. I mean, frankly, we're just not that interesting. They have a lot of things that they could do on their own. But I think when we really need them, that they're there. As far as wondering if their personalities remain, that's what survives. Is human personality. So, and if you notice, if you've ever been to a medium, very often the mediums will take on the personality of the person that they're bringing through. It could be a voice inflection, it could be a facial expression, but they get a sense of that personality, which is really interesting, when it happens. And I mean, F.W. Myers, who was one of the fathers of this, parapsychology, his book was about the survival of human personality, even 100 years ago, that's what they were talking about. Now, having said that, their personality may change over time when they have a different perspective, they might become different people, so to speak, and because they have a lot more knowledge than we have here. But certainly, personalities do remain, and they do make themselves evident, as we said, through readings.
I want to add there too, Bob. I think I've never heard, and we've heard this come through a lot in the group readings, overhearing the medium read other people. I don't think it's happened for Tom or I'm not sure, other than some aspects of the personality, certainly I have been told are there, but I've never heard, like, if somebody had a very bold personality or wow, he was very outspoken, wasn't he? I've never heard a gentle person turn more boisterous when they, like in readings, Tom's mother, a gentle woman, would step aside to allow somebody else to come through. So I think saying that the personality stays intact may concern some people who didn't particularly care for someone in their lives who has passed on and might even be fearful of running into them again on the other side. But I think that's what we've learned. Things change for those people. They mend their ways. They're probably apologetic if they were just too much for some people. So it should never be something to be feared. But it's the mediums would use that as an identifier, because right. Example, Tom's mom, if you were to have identified her as being outspoken or something, well, no, that's not her. And, but it would be an identifying mark for somebody else.
Yeah. And I've been in many situations watching group readings, and the medium brings, and I've got your uncle here. Or your father, and immediately the person goes, I don't want to hear from that guy. He was an abusive, terror in my life. And they won't want to hear it. But 9 times out of 10, that person is coming through in a reading to apologize for being an abusive person. So yes, there is, as we talked earlier about learning on the other side. Yeah, you're learning how not to be a schmo.
Right. Exactly. Let's see. We have a question here from Jim. He asks, what do you think is currently the best scientific source of information or research on the afterlife? And do you think scientific opinions of what the afterlife truly is have changed much over the years? No, they haven't changed much over the years. They probably haven't changed much, for quite a number of years. I don't know, many people probably don't know, but Bill Bigelow, who's a very rich person, runs a space program. I think he made his fortune in real estate, you know, or hotels. But, you know, he many, many years ago, he took up an interest in the afterlife. And more recently, he ran a essay contest. I think there was something like 275 entries. And he wanted to, you know, the winning essay, there was $1.5 million in prizes, you know, or $1 million in prizes. And then the first place was actually a $500,000 award. And it's not a grant, it's just, you know, a prize. And they, what I thought he was looking for was really, you know, cutting edge, you know, proof, you know, that the, of an afterlife or stuff that pointed to it. But as it turned out, when I started to read through all the essays, even though the, many of them were very, very well done, they all were a repeat of the prior research, you know, just an overview on what they thought was offered the stronger evidence. So my point was, there was nothing really new to talk about, but we keep talking about the things that we have learned. You know, maybe in the future we're going to learn a lot more and we'll be writing about those, but it's an example of, you know, I mean, there's some stuff that's going on now. I mean, we're brain mapping and we're studying consciousness the way we've never, you know, examined it before. We still haven't determined what consciousness is, you know, but eventually I think, maybe not in our lifetimes, but eventually I think we'll make great strides in providing those answers. But I don't think there's anything tremendously shocking or new that's happening today. And a part of that is because there's not a lot of funding going on, you know, to study consciousness and things of that nature.
Yeah, I think that's the, you know, when you science as a whole or as a community, it's a political body. And if you're going to come in with obscure or, you know, left out of left field ideas, you're going to be shut down. So yeah, as a community, science is not training, but that's not to say that there aren't serious scientists who are studying this. We've got some, you know, involved with the foundation. Claude Swanson's a physicist who's written books about what he's discovered. Jim Tucker, who talks about reincarnation. You know, there's a number of learned individuals who are actively studying this. The University of Arizona had an actual laboratory where they studied mediumship. The University of Virginia in Charlottesville is another one where there is active study. So there are pockets of scientists who are, you know, curious and trying to find out. I mean, science is all about not studying what you know, but trying to understand what you don't know. And there are a number of scientists with books. And again, before when somebody was asking about a medium, the Forever Family Foundation website has a list of mediums, but it also connects you with authors and scientists who are doing fascinating work with study. So there are books that you can read out there and more coming.
Well, and since we don't know, let's just live our lives like it's true. A noble and honest life. Don't take any chances.
Right. I won't get into great detail with this, but Rosa wanted to know, after death, do I have to come back to Earth if I don't want to? I would say to Rosa, no, you don't have to come back. You know, you have free will. Some people decide to come back, and some people decide that they don't want to come back. Now, you may not want to come back now, from, you know, now that you're living in the physical world. Perhaps you might change your mind, you know, when you're on the other side and you see that you may want to, you know, learn some more stuff that you missed out here. But from everything that we can tell, not everybody does reincarnate. Maybe some people have other opinions on that. I believe that not everybody comes back.
Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I lean towards that as well. Again, we don't know the definitive answer, but I feel that Bob's hit it on the head with that one.
I wonder if when you are on the other side and you already think you don't want to go back, but then you're faced with choices on the other side, it's like, well, I don't know if I really want to do that. Maybe I will go back. I'll learn my lessons back in human form and get it right and then come back over.
This question is worth some discussion. You know, Mary writes that her boyfriend, you know, had passed away unexpectedly. He had suffered multiple tragedies and losses in his life, and as a result, stopped believing in God. After his passing, I joined a church that I like very much, but they teach that in order to get into heaven, you must believe in God. And hearing this has been devastating to me. I can't bear the thought of my boyfriend not, you know, going to allowed in heaven. So her question is, do people who don't believe in God or those who stop believing in God get into heaven? So God and the afterlife don't necessarily go together. You know, I mean, the afterlife is the afterlife. It's another dimension, you know, where our consciousness or our mind or our soul goes after physical death. I think that we decide what level or sphere or, you know, what kind of people we want to hang out with over there. You know, we don't think that there's a being or a panel of judges that say you go here or you go there. I don't think there are these specific rules attached to our placement in the afterlife. And we always talk about self-judgment, which is what the near-death experiences talk about. You know, they undergo, as Tom mentioned, this life review, and they get to relive their life, and they feel all that joy that they and happiness that they gave to others, and they feel all the crap that they inflicted upon other people. So they sort of place themselves, you know, where they should be. So I don't think that, Mary, that you should worry about your beloved boyfriend not being allowed someplace. He's going to go where he needs to be, regardless of his beliefs. You agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, there's also talk that they're there with their dogs and their cats and their pets, and certainly they're not beings that believe in God. So, and yet they're welcomed into the afterlife as right alongside a human. So it's I think, you know, it's more of, yeah, I just agree that you don't have to believe to get through.
And also, does that go along with people, just say if you don't believe in a heaven or hell, but somebody does, and the pearly gates, whatever your beliefs are, that's, you know, that is where you'll go. If that's what you envision the other side to be like, I think it's what you are, how you see it is where you will go.
Right. As
your
Bob,
thoughts create your reality.
As Bob says, that's we get that evidence from people in the near-death experience who have been clinically dead and then brought back to life in an operating room or somewhere. And they talk about, well, if they're religious people, they say, well, I met Jesus and I sat and talked with Jesus. And other people would say, well, I saw my father. Or I saw my best friend who had died. It's more that, as Bob says, or I think Melissa did, you create what it is that you expect, and that's what you'll find. It's all about the nice thing about what we've understood is that after you die, there's a great, great feeling of love and acceptance, and it seems that spirit world wants you to be a loving creature, because I guess the power of the universe is love, and they want loving creatures. I mean, that every religion that you might want to be a part of, love thy neighbor, you know that's the tenet. And so you will be met with a loving presence. And if that loving presence to you is Jesus or Muhammad, then that's what you'll see. Or if, you know,
or your mom or your grandma.
Or if you don't believe in any of the deities, yeah, your mother, your father, your grandparents, they will be the loving beings that you
and
meet.
Your dog.
And your dog, yes.
All right, we have a question. Do mediums ever contact people who lived hundreds of years ago, or are the contacts primarily people who knew the sitters personally? I wonder if those living long ago have moved on to another state of existence. You're right. Mediums never bring through people who lived hundreds of years ago. I mean, there's probably a good reason for that. One reason may be, as you suggest, that they have moved on, you know, to higher levels and of higher frequency or higher dimensions, where they no longer feel the need to communicate with loved ones in the physical world, because all those loved ones are gone from the physical world, you know, so their communication takes place, you know, beyond the physical. So that's one explanation. Plus the fact if the medium is bringing through an ancestor of mine that lived 200 years ago, I would know nothing about that ancestor. So I couldn't verify, you know, any information. So, I mean, I think that's true. People who lived hundreds of years ago, they may be communicating with each other, but not in physical ways, you know, that we can understand.
Yeah.
I know that would be kind of odd if a medium did, you know, was insistent, no, this is your relative. If you can't prove it, we always look for the evidence, and that wouldn't be evidential.
You know, along those lines, there was a question about, you know, let's say we go back, you know, 40, 50,000 years ago when there were, you know, Neanderthals, you know, so basically the question was, did the Neanderthals reincarnate, and did they reincarnate, you know, into Homo sapiens, you know? So,
I'd probably say, you know what? Yeah.
I mean, there's no reason to believe that Neanderthals didn't reincarnate, you know, because they're conscious, they were conscious beings. So, you know, if your consciousness survived, so, you know, your soul survived, so your soul would reincarnate. I guess if they're reincarnating, they would reincarnate back into another Neanderthal, because just in logical terms, reincarnation usually takes place in a relatively short period of time. So they're not going to wait 20, 30,000 years to reincarnate into a Homo sapien, you know, because that's not just not the way it seems to happen. So, but yeah, why not? You know, I mean, I think that they would reincarnate as other conscious entities, you know.
Yeah, never mind what I was going to say. It was a foolish response.
And I don't necessarily have to reincarnate as a human either. I've read books of, I think it was the Billy Fingers book, about a woman whose brother died, and then she had lots of communication with him, and she wrote a book about it. And I think at one point he says, you know, I might come back as a tree. Just hang out in the forest.
And I've been told my folks are the squirrels in my backyard. So I'm very nice to them.
Yeah. It seems like we got a lot of questions about people hearing, you know, voices. You know, another, you know, example from this person, you know, said that she saw the recording function on her phone, had the voice of her son on it, you know, in a simple word, you know, mama, and she played it back for other people, you know, when they heard it too. You know, she's not really familiar with electronic voice phenomenon. She was asking if there's any, you know, logical explanation, you know, to this. And I don't know what the mechanism is that allows them to do it. But yes, it exists. And there are organizations that you can, and books that you can read all about what you experienced. There's an organization called A-Trans-C, and you can look them up on the internet, and they study electronic voice phenomena. There are books. Cal Cooper edited and put out a book called, you know, Phone Calls from the Dead, you know. You look him up, he's a researcher on our board. So it's a real phenomena. And it's not your imagination, especially when your friends hear the same thing that you heard. This is an interesting question. Is that, you know, do mediums ever question themselves, you know, regarding if they're truly speaking to the dead? You know, it is an interesting question because I've heard in conversations that I've had with mediums that they have said that sometimes they question themselves. And I always thought that was odd, you know, because that's their profession. They're, you know, they're communicating with the dead, and how could they? But, you know, mediums don't understand how this could possibly happen any more than we do. You know, it just happens, you know. Mm-hmm. And most of the mediums have absolutely no question, you know. But there are some, especially the more inexperienced ones that sometimes question whether it's their own imagination that's, you know, making this up versus true. I mean, of course, we have a way of identifying that, you know, because, you know, based upon evaluating the evidence, you know, you're not, if you're bringing through evidence that can be verified, refutes the argument that it's your imagination. It can't be. But, you know, we know that for every really good evidential medium, there are 8 of them that are not, or, you know, that are inexperienced. So they might question themselves, but I don't think the better mediums ever question themselves. Do you?
I don't know, but I have seen, like, for example, mediums, they're getting symbols, like I say, the signs. They're getting signs that they recognize, and they come in forms of just an image or something like that. Rarely is it a conversation. So they'll say something like, "Why is he showing me a fishing pole?" And then the person in the thing goes, "Well, he was a champion fisherman, and we, you know, had fished together all the time." And I've seen the mediums go, "Really? Wow!" You know, so they get it. They get as wowed as we do when something that evidential comes through.
That's right. Remember when our certified medium Angelina told that story where she was bringing through what she thought was a wood carver, and she kept describing this man whittling, and the woman, the sitter wasn't relating to this at all, but Angelina was stuck on it. She goes, "Well, let me just show you what he's showing me." And she's going like this with, you know, what would be like a stick or a piece of wood, and motions to the end. And the woman goes, "He was a pool player. That's exactly how he chalked up his pool cue." So Angelina didn't even know what she was getting, but she brought through the evidence that this woman quickly identified.
Yeah, and there's an example how much interpretation plays into the process of mediumship. You know, the two mediums might be receiving the same image, but interpret it differently. So one medium would appear to be wrong, and the other medium would be right. Whereas, they were both getting communication from spirit, but you have to be skilled in translating, you know, the spirit language into, you know, our language, which is not easy.
Maybe that's advice to a sitter, if you're in that situation, to say to the medium, "Well, what exactly are you seeing?" Because the medium's all about their signs. You know, if the medium said, "Well, I'm seeing red roses," that's the medium symbol for something. But in this case, you know, it made sense to the sitter.
Yeah, and the mediums have to learn, as do all of us, really. I mean, in music, it's the same way, that you have to get out of your own way. You have to let what's coming through come through, and don't try to grab it and interpret it and then give it to the sitter. You have to just let it come through. And that's not easy for people in a situation where people are looking up to them for messages.
Yeah. And then when mediums go for training, you know, they're taught to just give it like they get it, you know, so you just tell the sitter what it is that you're getting, and let the sitter do the interpretation versus you doing the interpretation, you know, because the sitter will understand. It may seem absurd to you as the medium, because you're saying something obscure, but that obscure thing could be very, very significant and meaningful, you know, to the sitter. I think, unfortunately, we've reached the end of the show. I mean, we'll get to more, of course, the next show. There is some that we didn't get to. If we didn't get to your question, We'll get to them next time and keep those questions coming. You could always send an email to radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Thank you for being with us tonight. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Good night.